Welcome to Test and Code. I'm thrilled to have James Falcon on the show today. We're going to talk about PyTest and testing and auto use and mocking and all sorts of stuff. Welcome to Test and Code. If you found value in this podcast, could you do me a favor? Could you go over to pythontest.com and look either in the top menu bar or in the bottom footer? And there's a few links we're going to talk about. Contact is how you can get a hold of me. Newsletter is how I can get a hold of you. And support is how you can find links to things like my book, the PyTest book, PyTest courses, the community where you can ask questions. And that's about it, really. I'd really appreciate if, especially if you could sign up for the newsletter. I'm trying to collect emails of people that might be interested in similar topics. First, I'd like to let everyone meet James. So James, can you tell us who you are?
Yeah, hi, I'm James Falcon, and I'm currently a software engineer at Canonical working on Cloud Init. And so for people unfamiliar with Cloud Init, it is early boot instance initialization on the cloud, which for most people, that would mean when you go launch something out on any of the major public clouds, any of your compute instances, there's some stuff that happens there to do things like create a default user, lay down SSH keys, set up networking, those sorts of things. And so, yeah, I've been doing that at Canonical for about the past 3 years now, and have been a Python developer for the past 15 years or so. And so various number of development and testing jobs.
Okay. So you've been using Python for a long time. And so right now you're kind of at Canonical in a lot of the networking stuff. Is the networking stuff kind of something you've been in for a long time also, or is that more recent?
Somewhat. Here it's mainly about taking a user-provided networking config and making it so that it can work on any particular distro that is supported by Cloud Init. I've done some bits of networking in the past, but I don't know, all kind of in different contexts. So I guess it's hard to go into detail about the specifics of those.
No, that's fine. Cool. I guess let's jump into PyTest.
Sure.
We brought you on to talk about PyTest. Do you use it in your role at work, or do you use it just personal project? Or?
Yeah, so we use it at work. I've used it at, I've been using it for years in most of my work roles. And so, I've been using it for a while, discovered all the fun parts of PyTest, like, fixtures and parameterization and all that kind of stuff years ago. And so have been putting those to use as well.
And the reason why I asked you on the show is on a recent Python Bytes, I talked about auto use fixture. Oh, we talked about a PyTest article, and one of the things was a good use for, there was a mistaken auto use fixture example. And I admitted that I don't know very many good examples for why you would want to use auto use fixtures. I have a couple use cases, but they're really niche. And then you brought up that you have some auto use cool use cases. So I guess let's, before we jump into that too much, it's possible that somebody listening to this podcast might not know what a fixture is yet, but do you want to try to take a stab at describing what a fixture is?
Sure. Yeah. So fixtures in PyTest are a way of basically performing setup and teardown actions. And it's done in a way that's more considered dependency injection, where, you define it somewhere and then just list it as a parameter in your test function. And PyTest is smart enough to go find it and go grab it and use it and kind of insert it into your test. So it allows for easy setup and teardown in kind of a dependency injection way.
And so it is set up and tear down around the test. And normally, like you said, normally you list it, the name of the fixture is listed as a parameter to the test. Now that there's a couple of cool things with that. One is it's really easy to tell which tests are using which fixtures. The other thing is that that way, if the the fixture returns any data or returns an object or returns anything, the test can use that parameter to read that data. But there are cases, one of the things we're going to talk about is auto use. If you want the fixture to run, but you don't need to list it, but you want it to run for everything, that's where auto use comes into play. And it's just a way to, when you're defining a fixture, you just say auto use equals true, and then it runs for anything in that scope of fixtures.
Right.
Now for my the use case that I am familiar with is for that I use a lot is if I'm using a hardware instrument and I'm testing that and I'm running a use case against that or many tests against it, but I want to interrogate the data logs on the error logs stored on the instrument. And I want to make sure that nobody forgets to do that. And making sure those are clean. I've used auto use fixtures to make sure that there's no any error logs. And but there's a problem. There's a little bit of an issue with that because if you notice it during teardown at the end of after the test run, you can throw an exception there and it results in a test being an error, but it doesn't fail it. And that's the only downside. But anyway, aside from that caveat, that's the use case that I have used. But you've got a couple more, or at least one more. So what are some cool auto uses?
Yeah. I mean, our big one is around mocking. And so I know, not everyone does mocking. Not everyone is super familiar with mocking because there's not always a lot of use cases around mocking. So, maybe I'll go back and kind of explain our use cases around mocking first and then talk about the auto use pieces. So for us, since we're doing things to actually set up the operating system, a lot of times there's things happening that you don't want happening in unit tests, reading and writing to your password file or creating users or those sorts of things. Obviously, you don't want that happening. And also the fact that CloudInit runs on a number of different types of operating systems, Linux and BSDs. When you read certain information off the device, you might be getting different things for different systems that you're on. And so those are the main use cases for us for mocking in that, I don't want to run these things on a local system. And we can make integration tests where, you actually go and run it on a full separate system. And we do that. But if you think about it, when you're spinning up a whole cloud instance, that's going to take a long time. And so spinning up new ones for each individual test is obviously just not going to work for all of the things you might want to be able to use a unit test. And so for us, we'll mock out the things that, if we're trying to run some external process that might be doing something destructive on your hard drive, we'll mock that out and run the rest of it with it.
Can we deep into dig into a little detail of at least a use case? What piece of that could you mock and how could that be useful?
Yeah. So for example, let's say we're just testing, we have all these various modules in CloudInit and each module can just kind of do its own individual thing. And so for example, one of them is creating users and groups, just within a Linux system. And so, obviously I don't want various users sitting around on my system that aren't actually, what I want on my system. And so we'll want to test all the code around calling the call that creates the user, but we don't actually want to test that call because that call is just, running the, using subprocess and running the create user command that's on the operating system.
Okay.
And so we don't need to test that. We assume that, the Linux implementation of that is right and that it works. But we have a bunch of code surrounding it that lets you set up exactly what that call might look like, what to do based on if it fails or if something's not set up the way you're expecting to. We still want to be able to test all of that code. And so we basically just mock out the piece that calls out to the operating system but test all the rest of the code around it.
Oh, cool. That totally makes sense. So you're mocking it. You've got somehow you've wrapped the, you probably are wrapping the system call with some other a method that you call mm-hmm. instead, and then you can mock that wrapper, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then also it kind of brings up another reason that mocking is awesome in some cases is because you can have failure conditions.
Right.
And it's often hard to generate failure conditions, especially with operating system things. Like what happens if I don't know why it would fail, but creating a user, I assume, can fail in some cases.
I mean, you know, if a user already exists, for example, or there would probably be some more esoteric use cases. But in the case of mocks lets you set up side effects. So a side effect could be an exception. You could have various types of return values. So if I call the same mock multiple times, I could get, maybe I created this user here and this user there and pretend that I've done it multiple different times. So the mocking library in Python is really powerful and kind of lets you simulate pretty much anything that you would want to be able to do otherwise.
So I guess I've got some more questions about mock. Are you using straight like unit test mock, or are you using the PyTest mock wrappers for that? Or
We use unit test mock. I'm aware there was an independent mock library, but I think that was just before it got packaged in with unit test itself. I'm not aware actually of a particular PyTest specific one. Maybe there is one, but that we haven't had any need for. The one that comes from unit test works fine for us.
And I think the PyTest dash mock is a plugin that does make sure that your mock is cleaned up after the test. But mock has I usually use it with straight unit test mock because by the point where I wanted to use the unit test mock, it already had context managers. Mm-hmm. So I usually use mock with a context manager so that it cleans up after itself afterwards.
Right. Yeah. So you can use it a couple different ways. One is with a context manager. So, you just have your with statement and then within there, the mock is applied. And as soon as you're out of the with statement, the mock is basically cleaned up. If you can just create a mock patch. And if you do that and you don't clean it up, then it will still be live after your test ends. And you obviously don't want that. One other way too, that's pretty common that we use is using it as a decorator. And it's the same kind of thing as if you put it as a decorator on a test, by the time the test ends or when the test ends, it'll automatically clean up there too. And so that's useful. You kind of patch it up there in the decorator and then you get a reference to it in your actual test definition as like a test parameter.
Okay.
You just specify it in there and you can set things up that way too.
Can you thinking about using mock with fixtures, can you use mm-hmm. the decorator with fixtures? Do you know? A decorator fixture or? At that point, are you using either cleaning up specifically in the fixture or using it with a with block?
Yeah. Are you saying like applying mocks within a fixture and then just applying that fixture to the test? Is that what you mean?
No, what I mean is like if I were to apply the mock in a fixture in the setup part and then want to tear it down in the teardown part, can I use the decorator thing just to decorate my fixture or does that work?
I believe it should. I don't know off the top of my head, but yeah, I think we've done that sort of thing in our fixtures too.
Okay. Or it, like the in the case where I'm usually using them with a with block because I just like that model. Mm-hmm. Within a fixture, you can yield from the inside the with block, and then it should be fine. Clean up afterwards.
Yeah, so we've set them up. We've done a few that way too, where it's easier, especially if there's multiple mocks that you need to apply to kind of a group of tests. You can just have a common setup fixture, apply these 3, 4, or 5 mocks and then use that one throughout all the various tests rather than having to define everything multiple times across the test. Because that's one issue, and this will kind of get into some of the auto use pieces too. But things can get a little ugly if you have to apply multiple mocks, because if you think of a context manager and now you're 5 levels deep or something, or you have 5 decorators and then multiple function parameters, and that gets really tall vertically, all just for one test. And so we found a few different ways of making it nice, but I don't know. It just depends on the context, on the use case, I guess.
Okay, so how do we pull in auto use to this? What do you?
Yeah, so for us, our biggest use case is at the top level. Again, for people that aren't unfamiliar, if you have a top level conftest.py file, you can set up certain PyTest things in there. And you can put an auto use fixture in there that will apply to all of the tests that are defined anywhere further down. And so we have one of those. And within there, we have a mock actually of subprocess. So, I mean, we have a subprocess wrapper, but it's kind of a mock of that wrapper to say, you know, if you try to use subprocess in any of your tests, we're automatically going to throw an exception and say, no, you can't be doing that. And so that's for our own benefit as we're writing tests, making sure that we're not accidentally calling out to something that's going to do something bad on our machine that we don't want to be doing. And, you know, it's not common that you're going to accidentally do that, but, you know, every once in a while you'll call something that's, you know, can call multiple other things that, and then a few layers deep, you forgot, oh, hey, within this call chain, we are actually calling something that I don't want to be called locally. And so it prevents us from being able to do that and automatically lets us know that, you know, you messed something up here. You got to add the mock locally. Because the nice thing is, too, is that if you have a top layer mock like that, you can then mock it locally, and that local one applies instead of the global one. And so that's useful. We also set it up so that you can mark the test. If you've ever used PyTest marks, you can mark the test and say, actually, we do want to allow a subprocess call here just in case we need it in any of our tests. But there's a couple rare occasions where we actually do allow calling subprocess, but most tests we don't want that to happen.
Okay. Now these might be really interesting use cases for other people. Is this something that's in an open source project that people can look at, or is it closed source?
You could go look at our CloudInit test code. I wouldn't necessarily look at all of the test code there, because we do have some old code in there that I wouldn't recommend as being good examples. But if you look particularly at the top level comp test of our test directory, you can see what I'm talking about in there and kind of how we apply that. We do also have a few other auto use fixtures. One I know is for making sure we're not reaching out to do like DNS type queries out to the internet, because there's a couple things again within CloudInit where just for various networking type reasons we might want to try to resolve a host name, but we also want to be able to run CloudInit on Jenkins nodes that don't have access to the internet. So, you know, it's something that might pass locally, but then once it got onto Jenkins it would fail. And another thing to just let you know, like, hey, you're trying to reach out to the internet in a way that's not going to work when you try to run it on Jenkins.
Okay. Yeah, actually this, so it, from what I've heard so far, you're using mocks and auto use around mocks, but mocks in general to isolate the testing away from, so that you're not testing bits that really aren't your code. They're either system calls or networks, services that you're, like a DNS, that's a service that you don't, that's not your part of your code. So you're stubbing out, mocking or stubbing things that are external to your software. So do you have any, the things that I particularly, I know it's just a testing style, but I shy away from mocking out my own code. Like, there is a model of unit test where you mock out different subsystems and you're just, or even different functions within your system. It doesn't sound like you're using that sort of a model.
No, yeah. I don't usually think that would be a very good idea. Unless, you know, there's something that's going to take a really long time, or, you know, have some complicated setup, that sort of thing. I could see maybe doing it in those cases, but yeah, in general, I think the better, you know, places for mocks is where, like you said, you're calling out to something external or something that you don't think that you need to be testing. It's part of another system that should have been tested separately.
Yeah. And it, like, in a general sense, one of the like examples that I've heard before are or things like, if you're going to charge a credit card or send an email, you don't really want to do that all the time in your testing.
Right.
But the but those are obvious. Don't you'd want to mock that case.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the less obvious where you get into like, do you want to touch the file system or not? And that's around probably test speed. And I generally used to avoid mocking the file system or even using, but I do, I guess I got to admit, I use temp files, and temp files are kind of like, pretend file system part. And then you can also within the temp file system, you can, have it not actually be a file and you can have it be a in-memory file. And mm-hmm. then that's kind of the same as mocking the file system, but.
Right. Yeah. And we will do something similar where, this isn't an auto use thing, but, we have a whole series of functions that we kind of retarget. So let's say I need to write to Etsy password. That's not something I want to do locally, but I do want to test that we can actually write Etsy password. And so we have a series of mocks that will go and retarget it into /temp. So instead of writing Etsy password, it writes /temp/Etsy password. And then now within temp, we can kind of do all these things safely without worrying about overwriting yeah. anything on our own systems.
No, those are great use cases. So, I think these are awesome examples for complete reasonable. You don't want your tests to muck up your system. So you don't mm-hmm. want to like change services or file system stuff on your own computer and also stubbing out or mocking network services. So mm-hmm. great example.
Yeah. There's one that might be a little more controversial that I'll do is that sometimes even at the top of a module, talking about, mocking multiple things, sometimes I will make an auto use fixture, that works for kind of everything within the file. And so, again, at the test level, you can't see what's necessarily being mocked. But sometimes, for me, it's a trade-off of like, readability and style and that kind of thing. And I think we have enough modules that do that we know to kind of look at the top of our modules to see, what we mocked before, wondering if there's something, some weird behavior that's not making any sense to us.
Okay. So I think those are great rules of thumb. So if you're having an auto use on in a global scale on your whole test suite for things you really, really don't want to have happen, like don't call mm-hmm. sub process unless you specifically know what you're doing and you've marked it to say, yeah, I want to use it for this. Mm-hmm. I think that's a cool way, like have a global by default, don't, but have an escape hatch if you need. That's kind of cool. It's a cool way to do it. The other thing, like you said, is other than that, try to keep auto use fixtures as close to the test as possible. Because right. why? It's because they're hard to. It's weird when your test behaves the way it, in a weird way. I guess.
Yeah, and I have been places where. We haven't done that. And you zoom out to an outer level and there's, some auto use fixture that's in the middle of, it's like you have multiple layers of comtest files. And in the middle of there's an auto use fixture somewhere. And it's really hard to know what's going on in your test because, like you said, it's not close to the test and there's real no way to see where is this being applied? How do I use this? And so, yeah, that's a great rule of thumb.
I have in the past thought it was really awesome that you could have conftest files at every level of your test hierarchy. Mm-hmm. But I've kind of gone back to, but it's bitten me a lot of times, especially if I have an auto use fixture sitting in a conftest file in a mid-level directory, I will forget about it.
Right.
And even a fixture that's there, it made sense to me at first and it still kind of makes sense logically to say, I want to keep a fixture, even if it's not an auto use fixture, just a normal fixture, keep it mm-hmm. as close to the test as possible. So mm-hmm. if it's just used by one module, throw it in there. If it's used by a few modules in a directory, that made sense for me at one point to put it in a conftest file in that directory.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm leaning towards, is there, put it at the top level unless there's a real good reason to not. Like for instance, if I've got, I've got projects where I've got similar tests that access either that tests the same behavior, but test it through the user interface or through the API. Mm-hmm. And in those cases, we've got little stubs that, like, you know, some fixtures that are the identical names, and but they act either on the CLI or they act or the user interface or the or they act on the API. Those make sense to split those up. But mm-hmm. normally now I'm thinking, well, who am I to say if it might be useful for other tests? Maybe I'll throw it at the top level. And maybe it doesn't make sense at a top level on your whole test suite, but unless there's a harm done, it's to me, it's handy to just have those findable. They're either in the module or they're in the one confidence file.
Right. Yeah. We do something similar. You know, we'll have a few in the actual modules, and then we do have a top level contest, but then we also split unit tests and integration tests under that. And so each set of those will have their own, but beyond that, I don't think we have additional comp test files beyond that.
Also I do have, I have seen people like stick all their fixtures in a separate fixtures file and then just have that import star from your a conf test file. It's a interesting design, like the hierarchy design, but I've never done that because I haven't felt the need. But
I could see, you know, if you have a lot of fixtures or your conf test is really huge, you know, sure, it makes sense to split it out that way. But if your conf test is, you know, a few hundred lines or something, I don't see a big need to import anything separate.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. Any other things you want to touch on with this? How long have you been using PyTest for this? Is it forever or did you switch at one point?
I mean, I've been using PyTest a long time, you know, several years. But yeah, I mean, early days, I was just using unit test things. But it was, you know, in the early days of PyTest, it's just people were using unit tests before that. So
are there like in this cloud init test suite, for instance, is it using both unit test and PyTest or just
there is a mix in there. It started off as just a unit test project, and so since then we have adopted PyTest, and so as we go along we do try to migrate things when we can to use PyTest. And there's a couple of base classes that we used in the unit test thing to do a lot of things that we can do with fixtures now, and so migrating away from that big base class into using various fixtures and parameterization and that sort of thing. And yeah, so it's an ongoing project. There's still a lot of pieces that need to be migrated. It's not something that will probably take a big chunk of time and just ever do it all at once. It's just, you know, as we come across things that we need to modify, if we got time, go ahead and do the migration first.
Yeah. I think it was a brilliant decision on the PyTest people. I wasn't around at the time, but the idea of having PyTest be able to run unit tests also, so that you can switch to a PyTest as a test runner and run both your unit test and your PyTest tests with one invocation. Mm-hmm. I think it's brilliant, and it allows you to gradually do this. You can just start using PyTest. You don't have to convert other stuff if you don't want to.
So. Yeah, it's a really nice thing about PyTest, because previously we were using Nose, and I don't think Nose is even supported anymore, right? Or developed at this point. So
I don't think so. I think there was a Nose 2, but I don't know where that went. And then PyTest used to support Nose test, but it doesn't. I don't think it does anymore. Not sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were just using it as a runner, so everything that was actually defined as tests was just unit test compatible.
Okay. Nice. Cool. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time with us today, James, and I wish you well.
Thanks for having me on. It was great being here.
Thank you for listening to Test and Code. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, you know, get a course or something. That's all for now. Now go out and test something.